Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Will.
I'm Brian.
This is a podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, and today we are covering Merilith and Garistro. One, two,
three, four. Welcome, adventurers, to the Dungeon Cast.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will.
You want to tell me what year it is, Brian?
1995, remember?
No, it's not 1995. Tell me what year it is.
It's the year of my fiends.
Indeed.
My friends.
A year in which we furiously and ferociously focus on fiends far and wide. And in our fascination, we find and figure that these fiends indeed are not friendly or fantastic, but foul and flagitious.
Wow. I love that opener. Far and wide, far below, feel the flow. I'm doing it.
Absolutely. And today we are covering two particularly powerful and notable of demon kind, the Serpentine Queens, known as Merilith, and the Taurian powerhouses, known as Garistros. Neither of these fiends are unique entities, but both are powerful enough and intelligent enough, well, one of them's intelligent enough, to easily be the BBEGs of a campaign. Hmm. But let's get into it, starting with the Merilith.
Scary. So these are the foots. These are still foot soldiers, but
they're the commanders. They're they're the generals and the Merilith are like generals and lieutenants and captain commanders, if you will. Garistros are their own thing. We're gonna get into them when we get to them.
Okay.
Because they're very odd, but I kind of like them a lot.
Okay.
Wielding a wicked blade in each of its six hands, a Merilith is a devastating foe that few can match in battle. These demons possess keen minds and a finely honed sense of tactics, and they're able to lead and unite other demons in common causes. Terrible to behold, a Merilith has the lower body of a great serpent and the upper torso of a humanoid female with six arms. Each sword they carry is highly decorated, and they adorn themselves with golden bangles and precious jewelry. Meriliths average 20 feet...
or 6.1 meters.
In length from head to tail tip, and 2 tons.
Or 1,800 kilograms.
In weight. Merilith, I'm never going to not laugh.
Should every I time have you said 1,800?
No. You're good. Okay. You're good. Good job. Meriliths are known for their great militant cunning and for their ability to utilize cold logic. They serve as the brilliant tacticians of abyssal hordes, advisors to demonic nobility, and in some cases are serpentine demon queens in their own right. They are often encountered as captains at the head of a demonic horde, where they embrace any opportunity to rush headlong into battle.
I didn't know there were certain like typed logics, like there were damage types. So you could do like...
You could do cold logic, you do radiant logic.
Flaming logic.
Psychic logic.
Psychic logic.
That's definitely the best logic.
Psychic logic.
Meriliths have domineering and wicked personalities, eager to bring pain and betrayal to others. How do you wake up in the morning like, I can't wait to bring pain and betrayal to others?
Who am I going to betray today? When one foot hits the ground, I take a deep breath. And when my second foot hits the ground, I guess it's just one foot for this chick. When my tail hits the ground in the morning, I think of betrayal. I take a deep breath. I exhale. I say betrayal.
Absolutely. But their malice is accompanied by both shrewdness and cunning. They are highly intelligent beings with an innate sense for strategy, their brilliance thriving in matters of army level tactics. Like, they're very smart. They're just very, very smart.
Somebody has to be competent down there.
Exactly. And this is like one of the first truly competent demon commanders that we've been talking about.
That's the gas station t-shirt that you can buy in the Forgotten Realms. It has a picture of a Merilith on it, and it says truly competent underneath.
Exactly. Absolutely. They also have the rare ability to unite and coordinate the actions of other demons. This is practically an impossible task due to their chaotic nature. To add to this, they have another uncanny ability. Most demons struggle on the battlefield of battle in the Blood War due to their inherently chaotic minds and natures. They have difficulty understanding order and law by nature, and so fail to comprehend the organized tactics and movements of their foes, the devils. But whether through disciplinary mastery or suppression of their natural instincts, Meriliths can predict the actions of law despite not truly understanding them in order to outwit the devil kind.
That's crazy.
It's very strange, but it's pretty cool.
They're all just the demonic version of Ian Malcolm's daughter, Kelly Curtis Malcolm. They understand chaos theory.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely right. In the eyes of most Marilists, nice pull, subtle temptation is but a silly game and waste of time compared to true warfare planning. They are fiercely proud of their martial skills and tactical superiority and often keep the weapons of their more worthy defeated foes as trophies. These weapon trophies are among their most cherished possessions, and if stolen, they are known to take extreme measures to retrieve them.
What do all D&D monsters, or most D&D monsters of note and player characters, have in common?
They like to loot.
Taking trophies from their downed enemies.
They like to loot the booty.
Their skulls. They like to loot the booty?
Yeah, that's what I said.
They like to loot the booty? Yes, Will. That's the kind of primo content I'm looking out for from you.
Moving on. Marilists are always eager to join melee combat if given the chance.
So they can loot your booty.
They always carefully size up a given situation first and plot to use any terrain and vulnerabilities to their advantage. They can swiftly strike with each weapon in their six hands. Their tails are capable of moving like a whip and constricting their foes. I was so close to saying a fun fact about Super Quest Saga, but it's spoilers, so I can't.
Don't.
Moving on.
Don't. Check out Super Quest Saga, a really good actual play campaign that we do.
Yeah. Marilist spellcasters do exist and are truly terrifying beings. Instead of specializing in any one given school of magic, they become the masters of many. And furthermore, they have the rare power to cast spells with two of their arms while still fighting with the other.
That's broken. Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious.
That is so cool.
There are even rumors that some Marilists can cast more than one spell at once. We do not have the spell casting Marilith variant in 5e, but I wish we did.
I wish we did too. Yeah, and we should. Trying to describe that as a dungeon master with like the hand wavings, like, damn, they're just fucking you up. They're doing jutsus and fucking murdering you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, hold still, stab, stab. Let me do this fucking fireball in your guts.
Yeah, exactly. As one would imagine, demons do not typically get along with each other, and Marilists are no exception. Marilists serve as commanders and tactical experts for the Blood War, providing the stratagems to complement the malignant magnetism of the Balors. That being said, Mariliths have a great disdain for their Balor commanders. They believe that Balors are in charge only because of their sheer power and are otherwise unneeded to conduct the Blood War, which they have a point, but also Balors are fucking scary powerful, and that power is needed to keep multiple hordes of demons in check and pointed in the same direction.
I'm going to say the only thing that can beat your intelligence is the overwhelming inability to defeat an enemy.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, Marilists are great and they can bring together a lot of demons and command them, but like when it comes to full-blown multiple hordes, like, they don't have the sheer power to make all those demons obey. A Balor does. Those motherfuckers are scary.
Yeah, it seems like it's a good check to have in place to stop Marilists from usurping and or like becoming their own thing, because they could easily like take an army and like go gather some souls and worshipers and like start becoming their own power.
Yes, and some do. I think they just complement each other great. They're the great duo. You need both of them. That being said, let's continue. Marilists have never acted on this belief of theirs for fear of that very power that Balors have. Mm-hmm. Glabrezus are another particular demon Marilists have a disdain for. I don't think we've really talked about them much on this.
Yeah.
So they're like weird lobster devil demons. I don't know how else to describe them, their physical look. But they are all about like manipulation, lying, and temptation. Like, they are on the front lines of like going to the mortal planes and offering deals and tempting souls to the abyss.
Yeah, because they look so charismatic. They're big lobster.
Yeah, they got four arms, two of which are lobster arms, and then they are like oddly reptilian dragon bull looking. Yeah, I don't know how else to put that.
I'm built to scare you to look vaguely humanoid so you can relate and also remind you of what you ate for dinner the other night.
Exactly. So Glabrezus and Marilists don't get along. Marilists find Glabrezus' obnoxious insistence on using temptation, manipulation, and scheming rather than outright warfare. Marilists normally have to settle for merely undermining their Glabrezu peers, as Balors have a tendency to favor their sinister schemes.
Glabrezus are in the sewer, like with a fucking red balloon, like, "Hey, come down here, kids."
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Equal Pennywise.
Got so it. That's all I have on Merrillis. They're pretty straightforward. They're pretty freaking awesome. The stat block's very impressive, and we're gonna get into it. Did you have any questions before we do, though?
I'm looking at it. It is impressive. No, let's get right into it. The Merrillis is a large fiend, demon, chaotic evil. Armor class is 18. Natty.
That's pretty awesome.
Natural armor. So this is what I'm looking at here is just their body.
I mean, I don't think so. I think they drew that in order to, you know, not be provocative.
Ah, so they're naked.
I like most demons are naked, so yes.
Yeah, most mermaids don't actually wear seashell bras. That's trivial.
Indeed.
And that's what this is kind of reminding me of. So we got HP of 189 or 18d10 plus 90.
So almost as much as the Crystal Dragon from last episode.
Yeah, like check out last 30, week's episode about Crystal Dragons.
Like yeah.
Don't get too horny, though. Speed is 40 feet. That's good. It's slither speed. They don't say that.
Yeah.
It's like hover speed, but you are touching the ground.
It doesn't say walking.
So it's not hover speed. Yeah. It's slither speed. It implies walking, right? Or running, I guess.
Yeah.
Trotting, strafing.
Ground movement.
Yeah. What you do on this earth or your fantasy earth. We have a strength of 18 or plus 4. Dexterity of 20 plus 5. Constitution is 20. That's a plus 5. Intelligence is an 18 plus 4. Wisdom is a 16 plus 3 and a charisma of 20 plus 5.
I mean, goddamn, those are some stats, aren't they? Like, the lowest thing they have there is a 16 to their wisdom, which is high.
This is a crazy...
It's a very powerful,
scary... It's like a level 20 character.
Like I said, like, it doesn't have to be, but you could have a Merrillis be the BBEG of your campaign easily.
Sure, yeah. Two Merrilliths.
Yeah, working in tandem.
Merrilli.
12 arms.
What do we call a pack of Merrillith?
Oh, don't know.
Yeah, because they don't do that. It doesn't sound like.
No.
But maybe we'll call
God, that would be scary.
Call it a...
If five of these entered the room, I'll just kill myself. I'll save you the trouble. Fuck.
Two or more Merrillith is a stabbing of Merrillith.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah, yeah.
Because they've got... That's 12 swords at least.
Yeah, it's 12 swords at least.
All right. We got saving throws. Strength is plus 9. Con is plus 10. Wisdom plus 8. And charisma plus 10. Those are huge. Damage resistance to cold, fire, lightning, bludge, pierce, and slashing from non-magical attacks. Pretty much all the standards and some.
Mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
awesome. Lightning, too. That's freaking cool.
Yeah, that's a common thing with demons is they resist the three major like offensive elements, which is cold, fire, and lightning.
Neat. So damage immunities are poison, and condition immunities are poisoned.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you're poisoned, a poison creature has disadvantage on attack rolls and ability checks. I think you have to like...
Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go.
I was thinking about how we talk about poison being bullshit and well, not bullshit, but it's being lame in 5e. Once you get to a certain level, monsters are just completely unaffected by it.
Right.
Like, as a player, it's absolutely not worth investing into. No. And I can understand why they made that decision. And I was thinking, probably because I was playing a lot of Elden Ring. In Elden Ring, mm-hmm. there is the poison status effect, and you can... put into it as a player if you want to, but it's not the best of the status effects that you can invest into. But there is another similar status effect that's much more potent called Scarlet Rot. And I was thinking about like, I know it's really disgusting actually. And it's worth investing into if you want to build that type of character, because it's very powerful. That being said, there are a lot of legendary monsters in the game, or even in mythology, that are the thing they're legendary for is like their extremely potent poisonous bite or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think maybe D&D might benefit from having a secondary, like almost like in Pokemon, how there's being poisoned and then there's toxic.
It's being badly poisoned.
Exactly.
Poison plus.
Poison plus.
Poison prime.
Maybe 5e would benefit from having like poisoned and then from having that higher level of like, no, this is some like crazy, this is toxic on a spiritual level shit. Like, this is like...
Those are just called curses.
Well, yeah, something. I'm thinking something along those lines. But anyways.
Poison for your soul.
I digress. Continue, please.
No, I completely agree with you. There should be tiers of poisoning. Up to a certain point. I mean, like, when you say that it's not worth investing in as a player, that's very campaign dependent. But it's also like the majority of campaigns... probably not going to be investing in poison.
Yeah, it's to the point where if you were a player who really wanted to invest into poison and poison daggers and shit like that, you'd have to have a talk with your dungeon master and be like, hey, I really want to do this, but can you accommodate me a little bit? And so as a dungeon master, you'd be like, okay, I will probably strip away some of the poison immunities you know, in 80% of the goddamn catalog.
Yeah, so, or give you a, like, super poison.
Yeah, exactly.
Some toxic sludge. Because if you're a rogue assassin, poisoning is one of your things, right?
It can be.
So you could, if you're playing a city game, then sure. Because those regular people...
They're not going to be immune to the poison, usually. Not. Yeah,
The clever ones are going to have the antidote right there. Like, I saw you coming a mile away.
Right.
All right. So where were we? We were at True Sight, which is a sense that this thing has for 120 feet. Very powerful. A monster with True Sight can out to a specific range, which in this case is 120 feet. See in normal and magical darkness. That magical darkness. You're not supposed to be able to do that. See invisible creatures and objects. Automatically detect visual illusions and succeed on saving throws against them. And perceive the original form of a shape changer or a creature that is transformed by magic. That's so strong.
Wow.
Furthermore, the monster can see into the ethereal plane within the same range. That's fucking cool. So there's a ton of stuff that this is going to catch.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, wizard. I was going to say, sorry, wizards.
Or druid.
But, like, yeah, that's what I mean. I don't mean Wizards of the Coast. Passive perception is 13. Not so great, but still good. Languages is, it can speak our abyssal and telepathy for 120 feet. So any language, pretty much. Challenge rating 16. 15,000 experience points. We have magic resistance. The Merilith has advantage on saving throws against spells and other magical effects. Magic weapons. The Merilith's weapon attacks are magical. Is that because the weapons are magical themselves, or is the Merilith the root of that power? Because if you kill this thing, that's 6 magic swords.
I would say it's probably a little bit of both. It's mostly the fact that the Merilith is just a powerful being, so anything it swings is just going to be that good.
Get that.
But I mean, these 6 swords were forged in the abyss. Like, yeah, maybe they got a little stank on them.
A little nasty stank.
Yeah, maybe they do. Maybe they have some sort of like abyssal +1 or like getting slashed by one causes a curse. I don't know.
This art has 2 like kind of scimitar-y swords, mm-hmm. and then 2 swords with like a forked end almost.
Yeah, yeah.
3 swords with a forked end, and then one like little short sword.
Hey, she only had 5 good ones, so she was like, fuck it, I'll pick this one up too.
They're all magical forged in the abyss. Okay. So we have magic weapons. It says magic weapons. But then it says the Merilith's weapon's attacks are magical. So it doesn't matter what weapon it picks up. So yeah, I would say, okay. So reactive. The Merilith can take 1 reaction on every turn in a combat. Oh, shit.
Yes, absolutely. And hold on. Let's back up to magic weapons, because that basically says, yeah, they're magical. So like if a party killed one of these in my campaign, each sword would just be, at the bare minimum, they would just be all +1 swords.
There'd have to be like, at least that, yeah. Maybe the 2 up top, like the main ones, are +2 swords.
Sure.
And then there's like tiers from there. This shitty little D6 sword isn't going to do much.
Yeah.
I mean, it will, you know, that's D&D speak. If this hit me, I'd die.
But reactive is an incredible feature.
Way to tank. This thing can tank harder than most things. Mm-hmm. If you try to run away, it's not going to allow that.
Mm-mm.
I wonder if it's like a tail slam, like flap.
Could be.
Run away. That'd be sick. Could be. I'd homebrew that in. I don't think that's a thing. Multi-attack. The Merilith makes 7 attacks, 6 with its long swords and 1 with its tail.
Yeah, there Huzzah! It is.
I've done it. Long sword, melee weapon attack, +9 to hit, reach of 5 feet, 1 target. It's going to do 13 or 2d8 +4. Slashing damage.
Can it you does 6 of those.
Can you calculate her up again like last time?
Yeah, sure. Cool. Let's do it. So it does 6 of the swords, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that, what was the average?
13.
So that's 13 times 6. So that's already 78 damage.
Yeah. And then the tail, let's see. Tail's actually long to read. A little paragraph here. Melee weapon attack with +9 to hit, reach of 10 feet. 1 creature is going to hit for 15 or 2d10 +4 bludge. If the target is medium or smaller, it is grappled, escape DC 19. Until the grapple ends, the target is restrained. The Merilith can automatically hit the target with its tail, and the Merilith can't make tail attacks against other targets. So if you're grappled, a grappled creature's speed becomes 0, and it can't benefit from any bonus to its speed. The condition ends if the grappler is incapacitated, which is a different condition we'd have to go read. The condition also ends if an effect removes the grappled creature from the reach of the grappler or grappling effect, such as when the creature is hurled away by the Thunderwave spell.
Thunderwave me, bro!
I know, you Thunderwave yourself. Oh, that would work, I think. Restrained. A restrained creature's speed becomes 0, which is duplicate, and it can't be benefit from any bonus to its speed. Attack rolls against the creature have advantage, and the creature's attack rolls have disadvantage. The creature has disadvantage on dexterity saving throws. See, I think having these separate is important, and players tend to forget.
It's important, but it's also confusing.
It is confusing, yeah. Because being grappled implies that you would have some of these issues that restrained has. But you can have one without the other.
You can. So I went ahead and calculated. If this Merilith hit a single target with all seven hits, they would average about 93 damage around, which is over double what the Crystal Dragon was averaging with its melee attacks. But we concluded that the legendary actions plus the rechargeable breath more than made up for it.
Yeah. And this thing is doing well over one attack per second.
Oh, yeah, this thing is a flurry. Like, I would imagine, seeing this thing in live real action would just be just one of the most terrifying sights to behold. Like, I almost rather deal with a dragon.
I know, because they're going to do this magician's disappear mission. What's that box they stab? Except that you're getting stabbed.
Yeah, you're definitely getting stabbed.
But that's what it looks like. It's all the swords crossed in between your body.
Yeah.
Good times. Probably not, though. Teleport. The Merilith can magically teleport along with any equipment it's wearing or carrying, up including its bra, and up to 120 feet to an unoccupied space it can see. That's weird that it said that about the bra.
I know. It's odd.
So, yeah, I can do that. Fuck. Reactions. Parry. The platypus. The Merilith adds 5 to its AC against one melee attack that would hit it. To do so, the Merilith must see the attacker and be wielding a melee weapon.
So remember that reaction it can take on every turn? It can parry every single turn, adding, what was it, 5 to its AC?
5 to its AC.
To its 18 AC?
But just for that one turn, it's not going to stack 5 AC.
No. Right? But my point is, like,
yes, every turn it can randomly have a 23 AC.
Yes, so effectively this thing has a 23 AC. It's only going
to basically, because there's no cost to activating this at all.
Exactly. And so, and every turn, if you roll and the total is a 22, it's going to parry if it can, if it's a melee attack, obviously.
Yes. But, right. Saving throws are different and like some stipulations.
Yeah. And ranged attacks are different as well.
Mm-hmm. So, this is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. The Merilith's fucking awesome. It's one of my absolute favorite demons. And I don't care for demons as much as I like devils. And the Merilith is up there for me. Except for Demon Gorgon. Shout out to Demon Gorgon.
Let's take a short rest.
Yeah.
Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/dungeoncast. Shout out to Demon Gorgon.
We've returned.
Indeed we have.
That's right. Mother Trucker, we're back. Deal with it.
Are you ready to talk about our next demon of the episode?
If the listener is ready to sub out to Patreon, just kidding. We're going to do these episodes whether you subscribe to our Patreon or not. But if you do, that's it helps true. A lot. We buy a lot of equipment that we need yeah. often for the show, as we came to the realization of once again last episode. Things break, like my chair.
Indeed.
Someone help me.
So next up, we have the beefiest of demons, the Garistro. This is a high-level demon of the same power level, if not even a bit more powerful than the Merilith. On the downside, they be dumb.
They be super dumb.
They're very, very, very not smart.
Spoiler alert for the Garistro at the end of these notes is a -2 int.
Yeah, they got a -2 to that
dump
intelligence.
Dump stat intelligence.
Indeed.
Need that on a shirt.
It was a hard dump stat, too.
Yeah.
The Garistro resembles a fiendish minotaur towering more than 20 feet tall. They have broad, lumbering frames that, even amongst their smallest members, weigh 1,400 pounds.
6,400 kilograms. Oh, man, I totally blanked. I was like, that is so heavy.
It is very heavy.
And then I saw the thing.
Their overall structure is somewhat bear-like, but their arms are long and wide like the trunks of trees. Because of this, they move on their knuckles like giant gorillas as they barrel forward. Great muscularity is clearly visible across their entire forms. Necessarily wide shoulders carry a massive head reminiscent of a leering bison with carnivorous teeth and giant horns that curve upwards. Their hands and feet are giant and splayed, yet still have humanoid, or are humanoid in shape.
It's a very apt description. That's pretty much what I thought, but when I looked at it in the stat block.
There it is.
Before you said it, yeah.
A wide variety of color palettes exist among them, including dark brown, sickly green, and purplish gray. Tame Garistro often have markings indicating their masters, whether they be collars, bands, tattoos, or horn carvings.
For a second, I thought you meant like tame, like some of these dudes are chill and not like super mean and evil, but you just mean like enslaved.
Yeah, I do mean enslaved. These guys are, how do I say this? They fill an interesting slot in the hierarchy of demonkind. We're going to really get into it because it's very unique. While the maximum size of the building size behemoths is unknown, the largest reported Garistro is 200 feet tall.
That's 61 meters.
Yeah, but 200 fucking feet tall. That's most of a Supreme Scream from Knott's Berry Farm.
Oh my God, I hate that ride. That's bigger than the Tarrasque.
Yes.
By a lot.
That's four Tarrasques tall.
That's four Tarrasques. How many Demogorgons tall is that? Demogorgon is like
four Demogorgons tall, I think.
15 feet tall or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Is he only 15? I thought he was 20 feet.
I thought he was two and a half feet. Doors.
It's 10 Demogorgons tall.
That's a lot. Shout out to Demogorgon.
Shout out to Demogorgon. His name is Bjorn Gnall.
Oh, the 200-foot one specifically?
Yes,
or 61 meters?
He walks around the abyss with a small village of were-spiders living on his back and shoulders. He's that big.
When they get too big and they fall off, they become adults.
Much like
possums.
Absolutely. As one might predict, the Garistro originated as the creations of the demon lord of bro science himself, Baphomet.
Our bro, Baphomet.
Made within his tower of science, they are the Horned Lord's most legendary monsters. Their proliferation across the abyss is due to Baphomet allowing a group of Glabrezu to capture his favorite beast, knowing that their prevalence throughout the abyss would bring him fame and glory.
Wow, man. It's been a long time since he came up.
I know. It's been a while. But he's
nasty,
back.
Nasty, nasty creature.
He's so nasty.
He's the worst.
I love him, though. Those who remain in his service stalk his endless maze, hungrily wandering throughout the halls, crushing enemy and ally alike. Because of this and their ties to minotaurs in general, Garistros possess preternatural cunning when navigating labyrinthine passages and shifting corridors, pursuing foes in a terrifying hunt.
Do you think Baphomet showers?
What's
more chaotic than not grooming?
He showers, but he showers in the blood of his enemies.
Okay, yeah, so it's
not... Which he keeps in large tanks in his Tower of Science.
Yeah. hit that spigot, baby.
Their immeasurable physical prowess is comparable only to that of the Balors, the strongest demons in existence that aren't demon lords.
No, that's not our thumbnail. That's what's on our thumbnail these days.
No, that is a Balor.
That is a Balor.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a Balor on our thumbnail.
Nice.
Yeah. But with none of the dangerous intellect of a Balor to match. When controlled by a demon lord, Garistros make formidable living siege engines, obliterating walls and buildings with ease and prized pets. A hulking Garistro sometimes bears a palanquin, carrying smaller demons on its broad shoulders, much like an elephant carries riders on its back.
Yeah, neat. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Garistro are completely lacking in subtlety, and without the supervision of a more intelligent being, are prone to going on rampages in random directions. If left this way, they have little in the way of goals outside of being predators, despite not actually needing food. They just like to eat.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, this thing is a scientific abomination. Like, it is based off of, like, genetics from demons and animals. So, it, like, has a lot of animal instincts, but its demonic nature means that it actually doesn't need those things.
So most demons don't need to eat? Or
no demons need to eat, ever. The ones that do, the outside of the Garistro, do so for the horror effect of it.
Yeah, I eat for sport, like Attack on Titan.
Yeah, exactly. While Garistros eat because, like, their animal brain part of themselves says, like, well, I hunt, I am animal. But their demon part doesn't actually need the food. So,
Oh, man. So it's, I guess it's spoilers for Attack on Titan a little bit that they do eat for a reason.
But, interesting.
Their guts get full and they just vom up.
Yeah,
they can't digest.
They consume for the simple but cruel fun that comes from eating living things and care not if something is technically edible. So long as an object is small enough to fit into its mouth and masticated, the Garistro will not hesitate to eat it.
There's big chunks of a kitchen table in here. What happened?
They really are amazingly unintelligent beings who only concern themselves with smashing and eating things, and only the very rare object they find aesthetically appealing escapes their otherwise nonstop destruction. Due to their utter stupidity, this hoard of treasures can consist of objects ranging from precious gems to pretty pieces of trash.
Wow.
They just have no ability to discern.
They're just scooping up whatever looks cool, nice. I guess.
Yeah. A very unexpected and oddly positive attribute Garistro have, though, is that they are very, very trustworthy creatures. Even if they cannot always be relied upon, Garistro tend to complete their tasks to the best of their abilities. They blindly follow their commands with heavy fanaticism, completing their duties unless told to do something else or upon death, although they might attempt to eat a significantly unimportant lesser demon if no one is looking.
They are big, chonky good boys.
Yeah, they're big, chonky good boys.
But they work for bad boys.
But they work for very bad boys.
Very bad boys.
Garistro are also strange among demonkind in that they possess practically no supernatural abilities that are usually associated with demons, especially greater demons, which these would qualify as. They're fucking powerful as fuck. What's their challenge rating? 17?
17.
Higher than a Merilith?
Yeah.
They cannot communicate telepathically. They have no spell-like abilities, and they are incapable of summoning more demons to their aid, which is like things that like most other demons can do. I don't know if 5e's actually changed the stat block, because I leave that to you, but we'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll get to
it. Do they have telepathy? Give me a sneak peek.
No.
See? And one final very strange thing unique to Garistro and not other demons is their need to mate to proliferate. Garistro almost never breed naturally, but they are mated by their owners. Garistro take 5 years to reach maturity. Centuries worth of selective breeding has only enhanced Garistro's already dangerous physique.
So as the additions progress, everyone, we will get beefier and beefier stat blocks, theoretically.
Indeed. It is at this point that I have begun to wonder, are these guys actually demons?
No, they're dogs.
Yeah.
They're abyss dogs.
Like, they are big, dumb, loyal beast guys. They have no abyssal magic, and they have to breed to make more of their own kind. Mm-hmm. Demons don't have to do that. They seem to be outside the normal demonic hierarchical transformation ladder. Like, one does not become a Garistro and then become something else. Like, the Garistro exists outside of that. They are their own thing.
Right. You have to breed them.
And they were made in a cave with a box of scraps.
The goodest scraps.
I mean, that
literally all the things you described that look like are what fused it together.
Yeah,
a dog.
They were made in the Tower of Science by a demon lord equivalent of Dr. Moreau. Like, are they really demons? Could it be possible that Garistros could be good guys if raised not in the abyss by demon lords breeding them for warfare? I don't know. But maybe.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think bad dogs are made. Bad dogs are not born.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Almost 100% definitely. Yeah. Yes. So I think there could be good Garistros out there, and I would love to see one in a campaign.
Good Ristos.
Good Ristos.
All right, Garistros are huge fiends.
Oh, no, we're not ready for that
yet. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. You trailed off.
There is a little finality there.
I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
But I have more. In a bizarre play to out-science bro-science Baphomet himself, Orcus, the demon prince of undead.
Oh, shit, Orcus too?
Has experimented with the lifeless bodies of dead Garistro, and he has gradually perfected them into his own personal creations. I hate this word. The Haurez are Garistro with the lower half of a giant spider and that have no thought for anything outside of death and killing. I just want people to know these things exist. Orcus made them, and he's diabolical.
Orcus picked this thing up and ripped its legs off and slapped this thing onto the spider and dunked it with soul juice or something.
That's exactly what he did. All right, tell me about the stat block, Brian. Just
like charging it with his ruby rod until it actually wakes up. All right.
No, he doesn't have the ruby rod. He has the wand of Orcus.
But, oh, my bad. Ruby same, rod is same. Esmo.
Yeah. Esmo, yeah.
Wand, yeah, pretty much the same shit. Mm-hmm. Sorry, everyone.
It's all good, man.
Somebody lost their fucking mind right now.
Yeah, they super did.
We got a huge fiend demon.
Tell me about it.
Chaotic evil. It says they're demons right here, Will.
I know, yeah. But I don't know if I believe them.
I don't believe you, wizards. You liars. armor class is 19. Natty. Hit points are 310 or 23 d12 plus 161. Speed is 40 feet. They fast. They fast as a Merilith.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely hoof speed.
Yeah,
speed.
Definitely.
Strength is 25. It's plus 7. Dex is 11. It's plus 0. Constitution is 25 plus 7. Intelligence. I don't know why I said strength and constitution with different inflections. They're the same number. Intelligence is 6 minus 2. We don't get a lot of that.
No, we don't. Not at this power level, usually.
Man, it's mostly rocks in that brain. There's a little bit of brain in there, though. Wisdom is 13 plus 1. Charisma is 14 plus 2 because they're such good boys.
I will say this is the opposite of Merilith, which was super well-rounded. This guy, he does two things really well.
Yep.
So strong and he so does enduring.
Two other things okay.
Yeah, it's true. The wisdom and charisma are respectable.
Mm-hmm. saving throws plus 13 strength plus 6 dex. Oh, that's a good saving throw. Well, not good. It's okay.
Yeah.
Plus 6 dex for having 0 dex. Plus 3 to con and plus 7 to wisdom. It's got a plus 7 to perception. It is resistant to cold, fire, lightning, bludge, pierce, and slashing from non-magical attacks, much like the Merilith. Damage immunity, poison, condition immunity, poison, dark vision, 120 feet, not true sight. And passive perception, 17. It speaks abyssal, which is good. Doesn't speak well.
I know. No, it doesn't even have true sight like most demons of this level would have, too.
Right. It's scaled back to dark vision.
Yeah.
The common vision. Challenge rating 17 or 18,000 experience points. We got the charge. If the Garistro moves at least 15 feet straight toward a target and then hits them with a gore attack on the same turn, the target takes an extra 38 or 7d10 piercing damage. If the target is a creature, it must succeed on a DC 21 strength saving throw or be pushed up to 20 feet away and knocked prone.
Oh, no, go ahead.
When you're prone, a prone creature's only movement option is to crawl unless it stands up and thereby ends the condition, which takes half your movement, I believe.
Yeah,
it does. Half your walking speed. The creature has disadvantage on attack rolls. An attack roll against the creature has advantage if the attacker is within 5 feet of the creature. Otherwise, the attack roll has disadvantage.
So, you know, very, very bullish. A very bullish ability here. I just thought
the Minotaur thing.
I just thought of a great D&D restaurant idea, the Garistro Bistro. I would go there.
The Garistro Bistro, where we cut up. It's a restaurant in Baphomet's, like at the front of his lab. Mm-hmm. It's like the cafeteria.
Yep, yep.
They're slicing up like.
Welcome to the Garistro Bistro.
They have like big chunks of like prime rib looking stuff. And you're like, oh, I know what that is.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good boy.
Go ahead.
It's about to be good tasting. Labyrinthine Recall. Is that how I say that? I heard you
labyrinthine,
say it.
Labyrinthine.
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 Recall. The Garistro can perfectly recall any path it has traveled, much like a Minotaur.
Yeah.
Magic resistance. And Baphomet is a Minotaur-based sort of guy, huh?
Yeah, he's the lord of Minotaur. Evil Minotaurs.
Okay, so
yeah.
This is just a Minotaur variant. He's
the horned demon lord.
I'm saying Baphomet on purpose.
I know you are.
Okay, magic, just in case. It's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
Magic resistance. The Garistro has advantage on saving throws against spells and other magical effects. Very cool.
That is cool, and that is very demon-like. And as a side note, I think our Baphomet episode might be my favorite episode we ever did because I remember laughing so hard.
That shit is funny.
Yeah.
The siege monster. That's why we love devils and demons so much, is because they're always so fun.
They're
to cover.
So ridiculous. I love it, though.
Between them and horny dragons, and dragons, it's really fun. The Garistro deals double damage to objects and structures.
I feel like it should be triple damage, but that's just me.
They don't do triple in D&D. There's no such thing as triple advantage. No such thing as triple disadvantage.
I know.
We double stuff and then we leave it alone. do whatever you want, though. Actions, multi-attack. The Garistro makes three attacks, two with its fists and one with its hoof. Fist is a melee weapon attack of plus 13 to hit with a reach of 10 feet. One target. That's going to do 20 or 3d8 plus 7 bludge.
I think that that's respectable. I think that there should definitely be a variant where you put a giant fucking hammer in this thing's hands. Like, it's smart enough to wield a hammer, and, you know, if a Balor can have a giant fucking sword made for itself, it could probably put something in this thing's hands, too.
Are you sure it's smart enough to wield a hammer?
Yeah, ogres can wield hammers and clubs.
Yeah, they can.
You just give it to them.
Anyways. Why not?
Yeah.
Really. Hoof is a melee weapon attack with plus 13 to hit with a reach of 5 feet on one target. It's going to do 23 or 3d10 plus 7 bludge. If the target is a creature, it must succeed on a DC 21 strength saving throw or be knocked prone. This thing is knocking people prone.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's
what he does.
The Gore is a melee weapon attack with a plus 13 to hit with a reach of 10 feet. One target. It's going to do 45 or 7d10 plus 7 piercing damage. That's a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm. So it's multi-attack. It does all three?
Multi-attack says three attacks. Two fists, one hoof.
Okay, so it's a choice.
The charge is the Gore. It's going to combo with the actual just Gore attack.
Okay.
But it could just gore you if it felt like it.
Yeah, or it can split its damage up if it wants.
Right. It's either, you can't do multi-attack and then do fist, Gore, or a hoof. Like, it says specifically that you're going to get one hoof, two fists, so the Gore would be its own thing.
Yep.
But yeah, that damn. So it punch, kick, pretty much is what its move set.
Or Gore.
That's cool. I feel like it should have a like Incredible Hulk from Marvel vs. Capcom 2, like
Garistro Smash.
Yeah, Garistro Smash, and hit the ground and all the rocks like fly up.
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
Yeah, you could come up with something like that.
Maybe for the big one, cool. For the biggest ones.
Yeah, definitely for the huge ones.
Yeah.
That would be a cool stat block, a colossal Garistro.
Ooh. Let's can have that one too, Wizards.
Indeed, you're welcome. Long rest time?
Yeah.
Long rest time.
Just outside the studio, ranking members of the Cult of Demogorgon and founders of the Dungeon Cast fan club, Grimly and Gromly, conspire to send their demonic master pertinent information to aid and abet toward the victory of their true patron, Demogorgon, in the Blood War. Shout out to Demogorgon. Let's listen in.
Ah, another choice episode.
Yes, I covered two this one. I'm very informative.
I love these ones. You know, maybe Demogorgon wants us to learn about the demons and recap it to him to make sure that we know what we're talking about, because we should know. We should know the stuff.
Yeah, maybe that, or maybe he just wants a reminder to deem who's still worthy.
He's got a lot going on.
He's got a lot.
Who's still worthy. That's good. Let's talk about who's worthy right now. Are you ready to do the rune?
I think so.
Okay, one second. Hey, Siri, let's do this timer for 1 minute.
I was getting nervous.
Fuck. Set a timer for 1 minute, Siri.
You really gotta work in runes.
You gotta stop talking. What's that? Siri can't understand me.
Okay,
oh, it started! Oh, God. Oh my God!
These guys are huge.
Merlets have lots of swords.
Large
and they're
horns.
People.
They'll eat anything.
Taking their tails and slithering around.
Oh, we're starting with Merlets. I went with Garistros.
Oh, do you wanna go with Garistros?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do
well,
it.
I mean, they're straightforward. Big,
straightforward.
Beefy boys. Loyal.
You gotta know the difference between
reliable.
Grapple and restrained.
They get really big.
Wait.
200 feet tall.
I thought.
Are we back?
Merlets.
They got six arms.
Let's see, this thing runs at you and it'll stab you in the stomach with its horns.
They want you to appreciate their brains over their physique.
Hold on, I think you went to Merlets.
I did.
Garistros.
They're smart.
I love that bit about the bistro.
Yeah.
That sounds delicious.
We should start a business, bro.
We should kill
Garistro Bistro.
Maybe we can get some on loan.
Yeah. Dark Lord, please. We need some
Garistros. We'll make a bistro.
We just need one. It could finally feed our patrons for a year.
Cooking is my passion. Next to serving you, my Dark Lord. Please. One Garistro.
Sorry,
oh,
I was choking on my saliva. I was drooling over the Garistro
bistro. You do slobber everywhere. I'm meaning to address that with you. You really need to. The hygiene's important. People give us funny looks when we go to the.
I have a glandular problem. Why are you bringing this up now?
Well, you need a napkin or something, damn it. It's all over your shirt. Look at you.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
Shout out to Demogorgon. Oh, yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the long rest. How long is it? Depends on who you ask. What's up, Will?
Hey.
Hey. I don't have headphones on, so everything sounds fresh and new. It's really strange. I don't know what to say.
You know what else you didn't do? You didn't pull up the checklist.
I didn't, and I'm not going to.
Okay, sounds good.
We're deep. We're too deep. We can't go back.
Oh, no.
Check this. Patreon.com/thedungeoncast is where you can go to support us monetarily, and we really appreciate it. I'm going to buy a new chair soon. It's going to be because of the people on Patreon, so thank you, everyone.
Exactly.
What he said. Indeed.
We have a merch store. We have a merch store.
Merch shop/store_ Dungeon Crew.
You can get your shirts, your hats, your beanies, your backpacks. You can get your jackets. You can get your sweatshirts. You can get your glasses. Not glasses that you wear, but glasses that you drink out of.
Yeah, unless...
All with Dungeon Cast stuff.
Unless
all
you
over
drink
them.
Really small amounts.
That's true.
We don't have those that for
I don't
sale,
know if there's
though.
Shot glasses on there. If there aren't, I'll try and make sure that happens.
Ooh, that's cool. There's those jars. Are they back in stock yet?
You know, I haven't checked, but I need one.
Check for jars. I don't know why I'm pretending I don't know the links. I have all that shit memorized because I fucking love when you guys go support the show. It's spreadshirt.com/thedungeoncast.
It's in the description as well.
It sure is. And we do have a P.O. box, which I keep forgetting to mention, which we should add to the checklist. Gall to pull it up. But our P.O. box is in the notes below. You can send us physical mail and we'll read it on the show. We did get a round of mail. I forgot to go to the P.O. box before this recording because Saturdays can be hard sometimes when your kid is sick. So it's tough to get to the post office for me sometimes, but I'll get there. So thanks to anybody who sent anything. The mail's been super weird ever since, you know, COVID and all that. So stuff takes variable amounts of time to get to us depending on where you send it from, but we will get it eventually and we will talk about it on the show. So thank you to everybody who has sent something and everybody who's thinking about sending something. Go for it. Do it. Don't be scared. We got Discord.
Yes.
And if you go there, you will find out all the secrets.
Indeed you will.
Mm. And there's some really great people running it. So get to know them and talk some D&D.
Yeah, and we pop in there sometimes. We talk to peeps.
Yes, we specifically said, I believe last episode, that we don't have to do that, and we don't sometimes, but we do actually. We like to interact with the fans. Thank you, everyone who is listening. If you want to support us, but you don't want to use money, I totally fucking get that. Money's cool. You can keep it and just like leave us a review on iTunes or something. We love to read them. We get like a little report every week in our email that tells us. Who came in with those shiny little 5 stars and said something nice to us. So thank you guys so much. It helps the visibility of the show an extreme amount to have those reviews. And our podcast has over 1,000 5-star reviews. So that's all thanks to you guys. We really, really appreciate that. Keep them coming, though. If you've been a listener of the show for a long time and you haven't left a review, I encourage you to do so. I think it would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, we'd really appreciate it.
Yeah. If you're watching on YouTube, we do have a dedicated YouTube audience as well. We appreciate you guys. And hitting the like and subscribe is always helpful and leaving comments. You know, there's people that comment on every episode and, you know, that's hard to keep up. I get it. So there's some people that are like, oh, well, we haven't commented in a while, but we still watch. And we're like, we see you. We appreciate you.
We do. We do.
Especially if you made it to this part of the episode. This is our jam. This is where we're chilling. Mm-hmm. We're resting right now. Indeed, we're regaining HP, having a campfire talk.
Yep. Charging up them hit die.
Twitter. We got it. Instagram and TikTok.
We got
all the soch. Find us on the soch. That is social media. Man, the checklist would make this way easier.
It would. That's why I made it. I made it for you.
Shit. I think we got everything.
I think we did. I think we can call it a game.
Let's call it a game.
The Dungeon Cast.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.